This is Tips from the Top, a Perry Marketing production. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Tips from the Top, a monthly podcast presented by Perry Marketing for B2B software and technology entrepreneurs, marketers, and salespeople. Perry Marketing is a full-service B2B digital marketing agency with a keen focus and deep roots in enterprise technology and software marketing. We understand how software is purchased within enterprise technology organizations, and we know how to market it.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jamie Hood, and I'm the creative director at Perry Marketing. Joining me is Tony Perry. Tony is the CEO and chief software advocate at Perry Marketing. Tony's an IT geek and a musician who eats, sleeps, and breathes technology marketing. He spent most of his career working with independent software vendors, justifying software to the Fortune 1000. Our guest today is Reg Harbeck. Reg is a mainframe enthusiast who's been working in IT and mainframes for over three decades. He has written, presented, and consulted on mainframe-related matters around the world, visiting every continent with the exception of Antarctica. And he is very involved in the mainframe culture and ecosystem. Reg is the chief strategist at Mainframe Analytics and chief software maven at Santa Rosa Software. One of the few good things that came out of 2020 is that Reg was designated an IBM champion for Z mainframes, one of only about 60 worldwide. Thanks for joining us, Reg. So, Reg, the elephant in the room is obviously the effect that COVID-19 has had on the software industry, especially as it relates to small software vendors or SSVs. What are you seeing?
Now, the interesting thing is that, especially in the mainframe space, the small software vendors provide an absolutely indispensable service, and people have had a chance to think about that more during this this pandemic. You know, previously, people had a whole lot of other things that they were dealing with that have kind of calmed down a little bit, and so projects and opportunities to look at things, but especially projects that are about upping organizations' games to deal with the increased virtualization that the pandemic has meant. So on the one hand, we see traditional COBOL shops, such as certain state governments, that very visibly recognize their need to update their COBOL to deal with the increased volume and additional things that are needed. But then the services provided by the various ISVs that have solutions in place for organizations have really been more and more essential. And so I think there's been a real rediscovery of the value of the mainframe as that thing that keeps along chugging and providing value as people have this chance to work on projects that have perhaps been by the wayside in the past and they could focus on now. The challenge, of course, is doing new sales or anything that involves new relationship building. And so because the opportunity to meet in person has been substantially reduced, a lot of activities are being done by WebEx and Zoom and all these various other means, or by email and that sort of thing. And that has reduced the capacity to really build an in-person relationship. But what it's also then done is it's forced organizations to take a step back and really try to empathize more deeply with their customers and understand what the customers' pain points are and proactively imagine and deal with that and figure out who to deal with in that manner rather than just trying to bring a whole giant team of people into the boardroom and throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. So I think that's an awesome opportunity for new and agile software vendors, but they have to understand that if they're going to succeed, they need to not be stuck with the traditional pre-pandemic way of doing things that was just about rushing in and seeing, you know, if they could get anything to stick, that they have to really think it through and really put themselves in the shoe of the customer and see, you know, what does the customer need given the new challenges and opportunities that they're dealing with, so many of which are emergent from this pandemic.
Great points, Reg. You know, Jamie, when I think about that from my perspective on the sales and marketing side, I think there's two events that we really need to look at. There's the economic hardship of 2008 when the economy just went into the tank, and then coronavirus and COVID-19. And up until around 2008, one person could really approve a pretty big spend, 20,000 and plus. One, you know, and then the economy tanked. And procurement people and chief finance officers started reeling things in and saying, okay, hang on a second. We need to think more about these big purchases. And so you started seeing groups of people required for the approval process as instead of one person, it's five people. And so what coronavirus has done with those group approvals is everybody's spread out. There's nobody that can go into a boardroom and all five people or however many are in the approval process can sit around a table and say, okay, what do you think about these purchases? Yeah, this one, no, that one, yeah, this one, no, that one. Everybody's spread out and nobody is really in the same proximity together. And so that makes it more difficult to get everybody on the same page to make a software decision. And I think that is elongating the software sales process additional to how it was before.
That's a great point, Tony. And I think one of the things that we try to stress to our clients is the long sales cycle. And so it's a long game. You're not going to walk in and a meeting or two or three and get the order for the most part. Has that been exacerbated by what's been going on in the last 2 years?
I think it has. Even for small software purchases, less than 10,000, we're certainly seeing, you know, we are also CRM marketing automation vendors. And people are taking hard looks at those products, and those are less than $10,000 a year spends. So everything's being scrutinized, and everything is being made by a group decision. Reg, what do you think?
I think the challenge has always been on the mainframe of who should have input on a given decision, because one of the things we've seen so often has been churn of software, and the folks in the technical role have not had sufficient input, and it's sort of been a dollars and cents decision. I think that as we see everybody kind of settling into a somewhat less extrovert friendly context with Zoom and email and these things, the introverts are given the opportunity to have more input. I think there's been an opportunity for more carefully considered input. And so that we see the technical people in the front line who really understand what is needed have the opportunity to speak up, just because they're not forced to think on their feet without the opportunity to carefully consider matters. So I think just that opportunity for people to get consideration from those who've been deeply immersed in something and want to give a thoughtful answer is a great opportunity to give a more well-considered and demonstrable value proposition versus just an enticing opportunity to reduce costs a little bit.
That's a great point, Reg, that I hadn't thought about. In previous years, if you wanted to learn what's new in the software industry or what's new in the mainframe, you'd go to a trade show, and trade shows have not been around for 2 years. So now the go-to is exclusively online and searching online and having an online presence. And those technical people have a huge role in playing that part, because they're the experts, they're the technologists, and the senior leaders of the businesses are saying, you technologists, we need your help. Go do some research. And the first place they're going is to the web. So I think their importance and their role has amplified it even a little more in this time of everybody working remotely and everybody working online. It just makes it more important for you to have a really good online presence.
That's a great point. So, Tony, we've got a couple of trade shows booked coming up in 2022, and now the new variant is out, and people are talking about how that's going to affect in-person events in the first quarter or the first half of the year. What do you guys think is going to play out?
That's a great question, Jamie, and I think it's a question that we will see answered as these trade shows approach. The big mainframe conference that's coming up is SHARE in Dallas in March. And before Omicron surfaced, I was thinking we're starting to get a handle on the coronavirus. We're seeing more and more people vaccinated. Mm-hmm. They're putting stricter protocols for going into public places for events like this and concerts and mm-hmm. sporting events. And now with Omicron surfacing and there being a big unknown, I think we're not gonna know about SHARE in March until March. And you know, that's scary to plan for as a marketer, because we're helping clients prepare for these events 12, 16 weeks in advance. So we were talking to a client the other day, and they made a great point and said, you've got all these people working from home and they don't want to come into the office. And it's highly unlikely that their bosses and their organizations are going to pay for them to travel to go to conferences when we can't even get them to come into the office. So I think the event in March remains to be seen. And many people think we're not going to see a return to normal conference play until the middle, maybe even third or fourth quarter. Reg, what are you hearing out there?
First of all, I have to strongly agree with you about the unknown aspect of Omicron. Here where I live, the health authorities are basically saying it's inevitable. Everybody's going to get Omicron. The only thing we can do is mitigate it by trying to reduce the speed of its arrival so that the medical facilities can handle it, and increase the vaccination so that when people do get it, it's like not much more than a cold. But that doesn't change the fact that as people make travel decisions, and as the travel authorities make decisions about who is allowed to go where, as much as we're all deeply fatigued from the past, nearly 2 years now, there's a need to make sure that it's not worse than it has to be. So for Share, I think it's right on the cusp of this. What's really interesting is that Share in Fort Worth happened right at the very beginning of the pandemic. And because of the fact that mainframers are natural social distancers, while Mardi Gras was happening right next door and it was a super spreader, Share was a non-event in terms of COVID, thank heavens. I was there. So here we are in the Dallas-Fort Worth area again at the end of March, and I've already booked my travel there. I'm sort of holding my breath to see what happens, but they've already, you know, they're making it a day shorter than usual, recognizing just how complicated it is. And so they have fewer sessions. But I think their intention is to try to ramp back into in-person because it matters so much. The serendipity of in-person contact with the best mainframers on earth, certainly the best ones in North America, the conversations, the connections that happen spontaneously are so valuable. And, you know, they've tried every different way with their online versions of the conference. And we just don't function that way in terms of, you know, casually socializing in a virtual room. It doesn't work out because there's an element of deliberateness in typing on the keyboard and moving your avatar back and forth in this room that doesn't play, and especially doesn't play for introverts. You know, and I think we have to recognize that this is one of the key things that is certainly true across IT, but especially true in the mainframe, is that the most valuable people are very often shy or introverted and who are much happier talking to a computer than another human being. And when they're willing to actually come all the way out to a conference, you know, that is a really big deal. And usually it's because there's people there they trust. And that whole trust element is something that exists more between the members of the conference and the user group than it does between people and their computers, that's for sure. So I think, you know, for me, I'm hoping that Share goes ahead, recognizing it might not. When I went to Share in Fort Worth, I wore an N95 mask all the way there and back. And I was just about the only person doing so. I think we're going to see a whole lot more people wearing masks this time around. But I'm hoping it goes ahead, you know, just because of the fact that we do need to do everything we can to get up, you know, up to speed in that. And besides of which, I think as we get to that, you know, three triple or more vax for everybody, and as Omicron sort of seems to be manifesting itself as a less virulent, even though more transmissible variant, I think we can sort of hope to find ourselves getting into a post-COVID era where it's not because we conquered COVID so much as because we got used to it and found a way to live despite it. You know, and I think that the whole conference space is going to have to deal with that because of the fact that there still is no way around the fact that in-person contact and the trust, the serendipity, and just the humanity of it are inevitable and cannot be teased apart from useful technology. Wow.
Great point, Reg. Thank you.
So getting back to the long sales cycle that we were talking about, one of the things that the smaller vendors don't have the teams of folks, the human resource to throw at proposals or sales meetings or conferences or whatnot. If you're a small vendor, what do you guys see as the need in terms of a team? Is it important to show up with 3 to 5 people, or is it Can you be more as effective with a smaller group?
Oh, you want to take that first, and then I can.
Sure. Yeah, I think, you know, the most successful software salespeople I work with, and throughout my career, I've been working for small software vendors that have sold into the Fortune 1000. So these guys are selling to the largest organizations in the world in regulated industries like banking and finance, insurance, healthcare, government, and the most successful salespeople that I've ever worked with were really great. They're obviously great at understanding what the product does and the differentiators from a sales and marketing perspective, but they were also great schedulers. They knew who am I meeting from the prospect, what are their titles, what are their questions going to be, and then having the right people on the phone or in the room back then before coronavirus, having the right people on the call that can answer the questions that they're going to think are coming out of the mouths of the prospects. So being a good scheduler and knowing who to have in the room, but also only answering the questions that are asked of them, not straying from the agenda of the prospective customer, and understanding that they want specific answers and stay on task for whatever the request is coming from the prospective customer. And then understanding, like you said before, Jamie, it's not one meeting, we get a deal. It's probably 10 meetings and you might get shortlisted. So understanding it's a journey and understanding who to have in the room and being respectful of the question and not getting out of bounds with your answers and the reason that you're there for the prospect. Mm-hmm. Reg, what are your thoughts?
So building on that, and let me first of all emphatically agree that for those who are in a direct sales-related role, that being scrupulous and conscientious about not wasting people's time, about understanding what their needs are and doing your homework and being prepared. You know, I mean, there's a funny joke that I like. How many software salespeople does it take to change a light bulb? And the answer is, I'll get back to you on that. And that's the beauty of having a techie with you. But the other thing to keep in mind is that if you really believe in your product, and you better believe in your product, then you sometimes actually do need to let the product documentation and technologists speak for you, not as part of the focused address to the customer's needs, but as part of the relationship. Because this is the thing, when you're in a long sales cycle environment, like basically every mainframe shop is, then that long sales cycle is actually riding on a path that you have to build. And that path is the relationship. And you build that relationship with credibility, with value, with connections, with real people. You know, and so you go to these mainframe user group places, such as the IBM main email list, such as Share, CMG, GSE in Europe, and all these related places that mainframers come together and share technical value and build trusted relationships, and have your key technologists be part of that ecosystem and give honest answers when there's no salesperson around. And let that relationship grow organically. Likewise, making your documentation available. This is a really important thing to me in a number of the roles I've had in previous mainframe-related organizations, is to get the word out, not just using sales paraphernalia. Yeah, sure, it's great to have the sales sheets, you know, the one or two pages of highly produced, glossy brochure stuff. But that's going to go to the CIO and to the, you know, the CFO and people like that. And they're going to say, oh, this looks good. What do we do about this? But what matters is that your techies get the real thing. They get the product doc that goes all the way down. And they get to talk, you know, SEV4 type, issues where it's like, I have a question about your product. They get to talk to the technologists who give an honest answer, because you don't really understand something until you know its limitations. Does this product do this? Well, you know, don't believe the salesperson. We don't do it right now, but I understand that they're willing to change it so it does it if there's demand. An honest answer, and you get the techies have a genuine, valid relationship of integrity of information, and that informs and supports and enables and furthers the sales relationship. Because again, you know, you got these mainframe shops. Not only have they had mainframes generally for several decades, those same shops have often been around for a lot more than several decades, and they're deeply established, and they understand the value of those deep roots in all of their relationships as well. And that doesn't preclude small vendors. It just means those small vendors have to pay the price of doing a relationship and not just a quick hit.
Great answer, Rich. And you've got me thinking about things and talking about all the solutions that are in a large enterprise. Can you talk a little bit about there's room for everyone in an enterprise? Yeah. About the hybridness of the enterprise software stack, application stack? What could you say about that?
Well, that is so important, you know. And as you know, I like to refer to the mainframe as just an absolutely massive untapped greenfield, because of the fact that the mainframe has a sort of a skeletal structure of everything it's been doing since 1964. And it does it really well. And, you know, I mean, the architecture of the System 360 was just so spectacular. It's for the ages, like no other computing platform that's ever existed. But because it works so well, we've all kind of glommed around all the bones of the thing and said, this is what we do. And so while other platforms have had like just a nonstop proliferation of try and succeed, try and fail, try something else, innovations happening that have sort of been hammered with, the mainframe has really stayed pretty close to the core. And yet there's so many things that are being discovered on other platforms that don't seem relevant to what we do on the mainframe, but with a little bit of change could become relevant, or that could enable something relevant on the mainframe. And that's so true, especially now when, A, we've got a new generation of people coming in the mainframe who have this digital native experience of having a feel for technology from one end to the other. And we have the demands of a world that is used to all the functionality in other platforms. And quite often that functionality would do best to be served from a cloud that was, you know, hosted by a mainframe. And so then to bring that together and have genuinely new solutions that are served by the mainframe or serve the mainframe explicitly that give a space for everybody to try something on. If you're not afraid of failing, and that's important, because real innovation, this is one of the Achilles heels of the largest mainframe vendors, is that they feel sometimes they can create a new solution and mandate that the customers will buy it. And that's an illusion because it's a relationship. It's not, you're not in charge of that. And so you have to take that risk. And the moment you're taking a real risk and offering real value, then you have a real relationship and the customer knows, well, hey, I'll try this out. And if I like it, great. And if not, too bad. And then it goes by the wayside and you try something else. And so that means there's space for new, completely new vendors coming to the mainframe with something on the mainframe, something on a platform that clicks into the mainframe directly or indirectly, such as mobile, or even an enterprise-wide solution that explicitly includes the mainframe as a source of power, which is something that's sort of grown up organically over the past few decades, but that we don't always architect right from the beginning. And so just that opportunity then to architect something that explicitly takes the mainframe into account as the keeper of the power of the data, but doesn't have to be exclusively on the mainframe and has a soup to nuts value that's so much like, for example, online banking with your phone, that so many opportunities to do that sort of thing. So I think there's a really neat place we're in today historically, where as people start to rediscover the mainframe, as IBM makes it available for all kinds of cool stuff in the cloud with the new Telum chip that has the AI right on the chip so you can do real-time fraud detection, all these different things, it is perfectly positioned to become an overnight success after 57 years. So this is a perfect time for anybody who wants to add to somebody else's stack or create their own stack or even work with other organizations and create a brand new stack and try something else that's never been done on the mainframe.
Great answer. Mm-hmm.
So, Tony, you made a comment to me one time that there's some companies, especially the smaller companies, that they don't even know what they don't have. So, you know, going into a large enterprise like Bank of America, what do those larger companies expect from the smaller players when the smaller players come in on a sales meeting?
Yeah, I think Reg alluded to it a little while ago, is having that technologist, having that technology expert in the room. The best friend a salesperson can have is a pre-sales person that has some pre-sales technology experience, not just in the technology that the vendor is selling, that the small software vendor is selling, but that's tentacled throughout the enterprise of the prospective customer. And it's important to have that product manager role that will assist that sales account manager and the pre-sales person. The way I look at product managers is that they're kind of the glue that holds or that connects the marketplace to the software vendor, to the small software vendor, to the enterprise organization looking for software. They're the feet on the streets, if you will. So I think the regulated industries where you find mainframes, they're looking for answers, right? They're not going to just wake up one morning and say, hey, we need some software. There's going to be an event. There's going to be a merger and acquisition. There's going to be a new CEO. There's going to be a new CIO. Something's going to break. Somebody's going to get breached. And they're going to be looking for answers. And there's going to be some type of catalyst for them to go out and find software. As Reg said, having those technology experts are going to be able to answer those questions with authenticity and storytelling. And Reg, you and I have had many conversations about storytelling. So I'll just throw it over to you. What are your additions to this conversation?
So I think building on that, even to take a look at the prehistory of the mainframe and the role of, as you're referring to, knowing what the customer's real need is if you're in there with a relationship, with an understanding, then you can actually see the need as it emerges. And it's so funny because the original technology that led to the creation of the mainframe more than any other technology was the punch card machine, as created by Herman Hollerith in response to the need and the RFP by the U.S. Census. And so they needed to be able to process the census data in less than 10 years. And they put out this RFP to process the 1890 census. And Hollerith invented the punch card tabulating machine, building on prior technology such as the punch card for his loom. But that what he did that we forget sometimes when we look at that great technology invented is he did it with a deep awareness of the need, because he actually worked at the patent office, got to know the needs, got to know the real problems and issues and the people and what they thought about it, and then took all that input to create a solution so that when they came out with the RFP, he had an answer. And so there, again, it comes back to that relationship that they knew each other, they knew what they needed, and that relationship has to predate any kind of cold call sales if you really want to be going in and building what the customer needs versus what, you know, the latest thing that your management says, well, you need you to fill your quota with this product now. No, you know, if we're going to write a brand new product, let's not just speculatively say, I think people need this. Let's have real people who've actually said to us, you know, over a beer maybe, well, I wish we had this, and respond to real needs based on real relationships and a real respect for the customer's business.
Great points. Mm-hmm.
So where Perry Marketing excels is helping small to mid-sized software vendors compete with the software giants. What are the giants doing in terms of, you know, marketing and whatnot that the SSVs aren't? And how can the SSV look bigger to a BMC, say, in a sales engagement?
Reg, I'm going to let you start here with your background working with a couple of those software giants in question.
And I think, you know, it's important to recognize that it's always good to work with your strengths based on who you are. I mean, a small vendor simply cannot afford a giant marketing department on top of the sales department and the relationship management department. You know, and the small vendor, like the person who is a people person is all of those things at once. The person who's a technologist is your technical source all at once. So the fact that you have to go in there, you know, really thin forces you to think more carefully and be more reactive. And just that very fact that you have to be hungry and adaptive and turn on a dime actually becomes your strength, because one of the challenges of a large organization is they have processes they have to follow, and they have organizations and sub-organizations that have to be respected. And so when they send like 8 people into a sales call, sometimes that's not because they're trying to impress the customer. It's because they're bureaucratically required to have all of these 8 people, and none of them want any of the other people to be there with them. The organization mandates it. You know, likewise with their initiatives, you know, you see their website or anything, it has to get cleared through so many layers that sometimes it really gets dumbed down or you know, smoothed out in order to meet somebody's concerns. And so on the one hand, those large organizations can survive doing that because they have the economy of scale and they've got the momentum. And so they just kind of continue on like a juggernaut. But on the other hand, their ability to do a surgically targeted relationship sale is really limited unless you have a crack team of people who all work together, understand each other, and agree together and understand and care about the customer. But that's something that a small vendor has no choice but to do. And so that would be the first thing, is a small vendor has no choice but to be dynamic, flexible, aware, and bringing everything they've got to a sales call, knowing that it's not 8 people, it's probably 2. And one of them's a techie and one of them's a people person, and they don't even necessarily get along all the time, but they're working together to achieve a goal that meets the customer's needs. And I think to own that about yourself and to bring in the resources to fill in your gaps or to help you move forward is a great thing. Tony.
Great points, Reg. I think for the small software vendor, being able to pivot, and you've mentioned that a couple of times, being able to pivot and react to something going on in the marketplace, or even that event that I was talking about a little while ago within the organization that you're trying to sell into, that's critical for a small software vendor. The other thing I would say are the simple things that you might not think about. How does your website look? Does it look like 2 men in a garage? Does it look like you've thought it out well and that you're describing what you do, the competencies that you have, and presenting it in an easy to determine navigation and easy to determine what the sales and technical materials that you need to answer questions? Because as we said earlier, initially, they're going to send some technologist to go look for a group of solutions that can solve a problem to an event that just happened, a cyber attack, ransomware, a new CEO that doesn't like the way a solution works or may have experience with another solution that wants to change. And you just can't change solutions with the emergence of procurement people. And I wanted to ask you about procurement in a second, Reg. It's having the acumen and expertise on the technology side, as you mentioned, Reg, and also having that brand presence and awareness to be able to look out from outside to within. And that's one thing that Perry Marketing does really well with companies. We go in and we say, here's what we're seeing from an outsider perspective. And here's what we're doing with other customers. Here's the difference we're seeing that was made with some of the things we bring to the table from that outside-in looking perspective. So I think it's a combination of things.
Tony, you were going to throw a question over to Reg. What was that?
Yeah, I was just going to say what we're seeing just in the past couple of years, and this could be brought upon the marketplace by the coronavirus, but the emergence of the procurement person that can just totally derail the momentum that a small software vendor could have. He's made it up through the technology side. He's made the first wave of the technology person investigating solutions. He's made it across the decision maker's desk on the business side, and they say, "Ooh, this looks really good. I think this solution could really help us." And it gets to a procurement person, and the procurement person says, "Hang on a minute, I know this guy over at BMC or SAP or wherever, and I can get this same product for 30% cheaper. We're going to do that." Mm. But we're hearing more and more from clients that we need something to take to the procurement person. We have to start marketing to them too. What are you seeing, Reg?
So I think one of the first challenges is everybody wants everything to be simple. That's the whole idea behind cloud computing. You know, is we want it to be nebulous. Don't bother me with the details. And the problem is that when cloud computing goes from a consumer way to position generic services to an opportunity to allow management to not take responsibility for the bits and bytes, you really push people into position of malpractice because there isn't a commodity. And so many of the big vendors will have a solution that goes with a check mark on an RFP that says, "Yeah, we do that too." And I've seen that where they'll acquire smaller vendors just so when they get an RFP that they can get the same check marks as the other vendors. And then you have basically this whole giant codified RFP process that everybody buys into, but that doesn't weight things according to the actual business need. And especially if there's already a product in place. One of the biggest challenges in the mainframe today, in fact, I've just written an article about it that is being published at Tech Channel in two pieces, is that when we do an RFP for technology, we overlook the stuff we take for granted. And this is one of the reasons why so many organizations have tried unsuccessfully to move off the mainframe, because they put an RFP together for everything they thought they needed and skip all the things they took for granted for the mainframe that no other platform had, and then go to acquire this other solution, discover that it wouldn't work because of the fact that it lacked all the things they were taking for granted. So this is a challenge then that your procurement people quite often don't have any technical background and often don't like the technologists very much and don't really want to sit in a room and talk to them about what's needed. So on the one hand, organizations, the big organizations themselves, need to have a better process that doesn't allow your procurement people to treat things as a commodity, which aren't commodities, but also that you need to be coaching and working with your technical people at that organization to help them truly appreciate and position what it is they actually need versus just the little checkmark things on somebody's marketing material. And so that's, you know, homework that you as an organization have to do and say, what are our unique strengths and value propositions, or the strengths and value propositions of the whole stack, including the platform that my solution works in, that goes so far above and beyond the simplistic expression that a procurement person might be given that treats everything as distilled down to these check marks and ignores the stuff that we thought everybody took for granted. So just understand what you're taking for granted and make sure it doesn't get taken for granted, but identified. And again, if you go to Check Channel, you'll see a couple articles I've written about that this month and next month.
Great. Thank you, Rich. Mm-hmm.
Guys, this has been a great session. We've talked a lot about the sales cycle, the long sales cycle, and what the smaller SSVs can bring to the table when they're going after the big contracts. Anything you'd like to add before we close this one up?
Who are you first?
Yeah, thank you, Reg. I think if you're a small software vendor, that you don't try to be everything to everybody. Know your space, know what your competencies are, and know how you can validate those competencies. And that's going to be in customer success stories, customer use cases, current ongoing communication with those customers. If you don't have a resource that's a product manager, find somebody in your organization to be that product manager. That person is going to be the spoke of the wheel that connects the marketplace to your sales team, the marketplace to your marketing team, the marketplace to your developers, the marketplace to your prospective customers. And I can't emphasize that enough. Over the years, the companies that I've worked for that have had that piece that's missing, they've struggled the most, missing that product management person. He's part developer, he's part customer success person, he's part marketer, he's part salesperson, he or she, I should say. And so that's a critical role in your organization. Look within and make sure you can tick those boxes.
You build on that then and say, absolutely, you know your space, know your customer. And part of that is being the relationship with the customer, not just with the customer, but for the customer with their organization. And this is one of the unwritten and hidden values that a good vendor brings to the relationship, is they become the relationship between the various silos in the organization that don't talk to each other and may be politically prevented from doing so. You know, and so get to know that purchasing person and understand what their pain points are and understand what makes their life easier. You know, get to know the techies and whoever in the organization is the one who first identified the problem that you solve and why they need your particular solution. Know the space so well that when somebody asks a question, it comes off the top of your head. You don't have to imagine it or think about it or invent it. One of the most important things to do is always make sure you're speaking the truth and you believe yourself and know yourself to be speaking the truth. Because one of the things that irritates these large organizations no end is when they ask a salesperson, can we do this? And salesperson just, yeah, sure, of course. You know, we can do whatever you want. You know, if we'll throw in services if it doesn't do it. You know, no, I want to know the boundaries, limitations, and I especially want to know why your product is a direct response to something we have experienced. And to do that, that means that you can say, okay, Joe in procurement, I want you to know that I talked to Georgina in systems, and that she told me all about your history and how this whole issue is the case, and that she gave me insights about how to make sure our product met the need the organization has. And so let me tell you about the people in your systems area and what they've been going through for the past 40 years and why this is part of your progress forward and why this is more than just a commodity financial play. So to know your space, know the technology, know your product, and know the relationships, and even be the relationship between the various silos in your customers in order to really make things happen.
And the thing I would add on the top of there is if you're going to find a product manager, that they need to be a historian like you, Rich. Because knowing the history of where something comes from can be a big help for you trying to go in and sell something into that organization, knowing that history, not just of the industry, but the organization within the industry.
And let me add this. Take it seriously because it is earth-shatteringly serious. Any organization that has a mainframe is one of the organizations that runs the world economy. These are the systems of record, and it is absolutely inappropriate to go in with a sales approach that's cold call commodity sales. This must be taken as seriously as a professional who's going in to negotiate between two parties who have 100,000-year whatever history between them. Take it that seriously, do your homework, and care about it more than just throwing something against the wall.
Great points.
Mm-hmm. Guys, it's been a great session. Reg Harbeck, we appreciate you joining us. Always good to pick your brain, and we hope to have you again soon. You can find Reg at mainframeanalytics.com. Tony, I talk to you every day, so today is no different. And I'll wish you guys a happy new year, and we'll sign off for now. You can find Tony at perrymarketing.com. And thanks a lot, folks.
Thank you, Jamie. Thank you, Reg.
Be sure to join us next month for another episode of Tips from the Top. And you can always visit perrymarketing.com for our podcast archive and other sales and marketing content to help you sell more software.